Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I will be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Tuesday, August the 15th. Let's begin on the front page. There are two great pictures of happy faces laughing, and it says Laurel Gaff, a third grader at Glen Elementary School in Normal, visits with her teachers last week at Hidden Creek Nature Sanctuary in Normal. Teachers are, from left to right, Julie Thornwell, Michelle Wagehoft, and Megan Brown. And the picture below is another picture of happy people. Glenn Principal Maureen Beck meets Glenn, third grader Isaiah Wills at Underwood Park last week. Glenn teachers visited several parks in Normal to chat with students before school starts on Wednesday. And the article is, Teachers' visits bring school closer to home. Glenn students catch up with instructors before class begins. A group of teachers from Glenn Elementary School couldn't wait until Wednesday to meet their students. Late last week, 17 of them packed into a small school bus and drove around the surrounding Normal neighborhoods to catch up with students as summer vacation winds down. We wanted to see where our students come from to get an idea of their lives outside of school. It's also an opportunity for us to bond as a staff, said Michelle Wagehoft, a third grade teacher at Glen. She helped organize the day of visits, making stops at 1 Normal Plaza, Hidden Creek Nature Sanctuary, and Underwood Park, all in Normal, and Wingover Apartments in Bloomington. Wagehoft previously sent an email to Glen families to let them know when and where the teachers would stop for the visits. Our goal was to generate a little enthusiasm for students before school starts. When teachers and students are all on the same page and rolling in the same direction, that's when you get progress, said Wagehoft. Glen fifth grader Zara Schoburn waited at the first stop with her dad, Zach, and their dog, Louie. I wanted to support my teachers since they're taking time out of their day to talk to me, said Zara. I'm excited to start school and get to know them. Since I'm meeting them now, I won't feel like a complete stranger on the first day. At each stop, teachers gave hugs and high fives and handed out bookmarks and pencils. Maureen Back will serve as the new principal at Glen for the upcoming school year. She joined the teachers and introduced herself to each family. It's a great way for the staff to get that view into students' lives while getting out into the neighborhoods around our school, said Back. That collaboration is so important for the success of students. Laurel Gaff, Glen third grader, rolled up on a scooter to the Hidden Creek Nature Sanctuary stop, joined by her grandpa, Tony Gaff of Normal, and sister, Hannah Gaff, a seventh grader at Kingsley Junior High. I was excited to meet my new principal, said Laurel. I can't wait to meet my new art teacher. Tony Gaff has volunteered at Glen in the past and said he was glad to see the teachers making an effort to meet students in advance. It's great. I come from a small town with a smaller school than Glen, and this feels like the same environment, he said. At Underwood Park, the teachers had barely stepped off the bus before students started streaming over the hill. They came on bicycles and rollerblades, sporting scuffed knees and tan lines after a summer of adventures. Claire Hedden of Normal stopped by the park with her daughters, Thea 5 and Estelle 9, after a morning of back-to-school shopping. This is a more casual and intimate environment for them to meet their teachers, said Hedden. It brings school closer to home. It's a great way for the kids to realize their teachers are not just teachers, they are individuals. It's nice to see my teachers again. I told them all about my summer vacation, said Estelle, who will enter fourth grade at Glen. Kyla Brooks of Normal took a walk to the park with her grandson Isaiah, who will start third grade at Glen on Wednesday. It's important for him to get to know his teachers, and it's better for me to know them too. I like to stay in touch with them throughout the year. This gives him a chance to interact with them on an educational level and personal level, said Brooks. Isaiah said that he is excited for learning as the first day of school approaches. They are good teachers, he said. You can always talk to them. Resident calls out Renner for email. Bloomington resident Bruce Meeks on Monday publicly called for the City Council and the State Police to act against Mayor Terry Renner for allegedly intimidating Meeks, a frequent critic of his administration, and calling him crazy and pathetic in an early morning email. "I asked for the council to take some action," Meeks told the Pantograph during a break in a city council work session at which he read the email during the time for public comments. The meeting was called to discuss Renner's proposal for hiring an assistant for the mayor and revising the Downtown Bloomington Association. "I feel that it is comparable to what Renner was rebuked for in 2015, Meeks said, referring to when the City Council formally criticized Renner for a late-night online rant against a conservative blogger who also frequently challenges Renner. "You truly do seem to be totally crazy as they come," the mayor wrote in the email that he sent at 2:46 a.m. Sunday. "It's too bad we can't bill for the tens of thousands of dollars you cost the city taxpayers of Bloomington over absolutely nothing. That would be true justice," wrote Renner, referring to Meek's frequent requests for information from the city through the Freedom of Information Act. "It seems as if you do this kind of garbage because you don't have an actual job. Very sad and pathetic." Meeks said that he has asked the Illinois State Police to look into the intimidation allegation, but the Pantograph was unable to confirm Monday whether the state police are investigating. Meeks alleged Renner chastised him for raising questions about whether a city credit card, called a procurement card or P-card, was improperly used to buy a $1,836 airline ticket for Renner's girlfriend, Margot Ehrlich. She accompanied Renner on a city-sponsored trip earlier this month to attend the 55th anniversary celebration of the Sister City Sister bond with Asahikawa, Japan. The city received a check for that amount May 26th from Ehrlich as payment for her ticket, according to the documents the Pantograph received from the city through a Freedom of Information Act request, or FOIA. Renner did not comment during the meeting because council members customarily do not address remarks made during the time set aside for public comments. He did address the matter later, during a time at the regular council meeting set aside for the mayor's comments. "It seems like it's a show of silliness, lies, and videotapes," he said. Countering allegations that the ticket purchase violated the law, Renner said it's an absolute total lie. The chief legal officer of the city has said, even if the particular ticket in question were paid for by the city, it was not, it would have been legal, because the person in question was an official delegate of the Sisters City's committee and did have an official role. "At the end of the day, there were no policies that were violated. It was all something that was appropriate. That's one of the reasons why I think that very many good people do not even want to bother to run for public office, because they know they or their loved ones are going to be trashed sooner or later by people who seem to have nothing better to do with their lives," added Renner. The mayor's early Sunday email referenced an email Meeks sent July the 31st to City Attorney Jeff Juergens, Alderman and McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers. In it, Meeks asked whether the city would ask for a state police probe into the airline ticket and other spending. "My purpose for filing for a request for an investigation, which I have done, is to get clarity on what transpired with the public funds, not just for a single purchase related to a plane ticket to Japan, but there are other situations," said Meeks. "There also has been a long-term concern about using public funds for lunches." Meeks said he talked to the Bloomington Police Department and was told to contact state police. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers told the Pantograph, "My office has no role in this at this time. If someone thinks they are a victim of a crime, they need to call police and file a report." Mayor lays out proposal for hiring aide. Mayor Terry Renner said Monday that he sees hiring a mayoral aide would help to improve communication between city officials and the public. Renner laid out his request for the creation of the aide's position during a special city council meeting Monday night at City Hall, prior to the regular council session. The proposal, which drew little support from aldermen, was not brought for a vote. "We have to get real," Renner said. "I think the citizens would benefit. Our citizens deserve thoughtful and not just off-the-cuff responses. This is just the beginning of a conversation." Renner said an aide would help him keep up with the demands that he and other mayors face daily. He emphasized he is not trying to change Bloomington's form of government, in which the city manager runs the city government under the supervision of a part-time mayor and council. He said another option would be to have aldermen act as liaisons to other government bodies such as school districts. Renner, who is paid $12,000 annually to serve as mayor, suggested an aide would make $40,000 to $53,000 a year plus benefits, but specific duties and salary would be a council decision. In outlining his proposal, he said, "The position of mayor has changed over the years, and now it's difficult for one person to handle all of the requests and still have time for other projects, such as writing grants." Renner said that he understands there could be complications, including putting a future mayor in a difficult position of having to make a decision about an aide from a previous administration. "I won't be mayor forever," he said. Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black said he would possibly support such a position. "From time to time, people look to us for resources, and I could see where this person could be more of an advocate for the process and not just the project per se," he said. But several other aldermen voiced opposition to the plan. "Everything is already researched by our hard-working staff," said Ward 5 Alderman Joni Painter. "I don't see where this is necessary. I understand where the mayor may need someone to follow them around and assist, but that can be done by other council members or staff." Ward 3 Alderman Mboka Wolambwe said that he would have a difficult time justifying the position to constituents. "I have received a lot of feedback in the past couple of days, and a lot of that feedback was not positive, and in fact, I would say it was mostly negative," he said. "I think there were many reasons for that. I would struggle to try and justify it to them. When you decide to add a staff member, I think the public will ask, and rightfully so, what am I getting back? How effective will that be? And we have to be able to demonstrate that." Ward 2 Alderman David Sage criticized Renner for even discussing the issue when the council likely would reject the idea. "Why bring this up if there is no support for it?" he asked. "We have already devoted staff time to this when staff could have been working on other items that did have the support of the council." Renner countered by saying that without input from the council during a meeting, it would be impossible to know if the council was supportive of the idea. "We are not bringing this up for a vote at this point, but we are just discussing some options," he said. Other options would include appointing aldermen to act as liaisons with other governmental bodies, such as school districts. "As a mayor, you always want to have Plan B, C, D, and E," Renner said. "That's all I'm doing here." Daily Digest. Cornell Day's celebration set. The fourth annual Cornell Day celebration will be September 8th to 10th in South Park, North Park, and other areas in town. The event will include family movie night, a craft fair flea market, sports tournaments, a parade, a car show, a run walk, an 1860-style baseball game, alumni homecoming, and kiddie court. The full schedule is available on the Cornell Days Celebration Facebook page, where registration forms are available, www.facebook.com/villageofcornell. A shuttle bus will be available between South Park and North Park events. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, August 15th, the 227th day of 2017, and there are 138 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On August 15th, 1947, India became independent after some 200 years of British rule. On this date in 1057, Macbeth, King of Scots, was killed in battle by Malcolm, the eldest son of King Duncan, whom Macbeth had slain. In 1483, the Sistine Chapel was consecrated by Pope Sixtus IV. In 1812, the Battle of Fort Dearborn took place as Potawatomi warriors attacked a U.S. military garrison of about 100 people. Most of the garrison was killed, while those who remained were taken prisoner. In 1914, the Panama Canal officially opened as the SS Ancon crossed the just-completed waterway between the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans. In 1935, humorist Will Rogers and aviator Wiley Post were killed when their airplane crashed near Point Barrow in the Alaska Territory. In 1939, the MGM musical The Wizard of Oz opened at the Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. In 1945, in a pre-recorded radio address, Japan's Emperor Hirohito announced that his country had accepted terms of surrender for ending World War II. In 1965, the Beatles played to a crowd of more than 55,000 at New York's Shea Stadium. In 1967, a 50-foot-tall sculpture by Pablo Picasso was dedicated in Daley Plaza in Chicago by Mayor Richard J. Daley. In 1969, the Woodstock Music and Art Fair opened in upstate New York. Thought for today: to feel that one has a place in life solves half the problem of contentment. Written by George Edward Woodberry, American poet, critic, and educator, 1855 to 1930. And here is today's Flick Fact. Question: times have changed, issues have changed, lifestyles have changed. For example, 160 years ago, back in the days of Abe Lincoln in this area, this newspaper took a strong editorial stance against local druggists because they had so few of what? And the answer is slimy flatworms, also known as leeches. Used for medicinal purposes back then, in 1857 there was a leech shortage in Bloomington. We are at a loss to understand why leeches are not kept on hand by our druggists, for in most cities the size of Bloomington, there is a good demand for them. This newspaper editorialized: there is no good reason why our physicians should be compelled to send to Chicago to apply leeches. Reduced sentence sought. Meller's case to be heard in September over husband's death. A Woodford County judge will consider a request to reduce the 8-year prison sentence of a Bloomington woman who confessed to killing her husband in October 2016. Sarah Meller was sentenced July 18th after pleading guilty to second-degree murder in the stabbing death of her husband, Mark Meller, at a campground near Carlock. According to prosecutors, the two argued and struggled over a knife. During the altercation, Mark Meller was stabbed in the chest. He later died at Advocate Broman Regional Medical Center. Sarah Meller was originally charged with first-degree murder, but in May accepted a deal to plead guilty to second-degree murder. She faced punishment ranging from probation to 20 years in prison. After 4 hours of testimony at her sentence hearing, Judge Michael Stroh sentenced her to 8 years, saying, "Sometimes good people do bad things." Sarah Meller was a teacher at Bloomington High School, but resigned after her arrest. The motion to reconsider Meller's sentencing was filed earlier this month by her attorney, Stephanie Wong. Wong could not be reached for comment on Monday. Meller's case will be heard September 5th at the Woodford County Courthouse. Meller, who had been in the county jail since her arrest on the day of the stabbing, has been transferred to Logan Correctional Center in Lincoln and remains in the orientation program for Illinois Department of Corrections inmates. Witnesses say they were duped in bank fraud case. A jury trial opened Monday for a Bloomington man accused of organizing a scheme to defraud U.S. Bank with the help of four other people. Reginald Cooper, 25, is charged with organizing a financial crimes enterprise in which he allegedly recruited four others to open accounts last year at the bank on South Main Street in Normal that he later used to cash fraudulent checks. In his opening statement to the jury, Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon said, "Consistency is an important concept, regardless of what you're doing. The defendant does things consistently," said the prosecutor. "What he does is bank fraud. He's the top of the scheme, using unemployed and homeless people to help him commit crimes," said Rigdon. Cooper allegedly gave each person $50 to open a savings and checking account. He took the account information and debit cards from the four and went on to cash forged checks belonging to several other people, said Rigdon. Defense lawyer John Boosin asked the jury to pay attention to who did what when and the timeline, and who did not do what and when. The evidence is going to show that Reginald was not an organizer of anything. The jury heard from U.S. Bank fraud investigator Mary Pat Panetti, who explained the alleged scheme and identified photos collected from ATMs that appeared to depict Cooper using the debit cards for cash. 19-year-old Kelsey Phelps testified that she agreed to open the account because she was asked by a former friend who wanted to help Cooper. The Bloomington woman said that she began to have doubts about her decision soon after she left the bank. "I felt something was wrong with the situation," said Phelps, telling jurors that she felt pressured to help Cooper. "The trip to the bank came with an offer that was never fulfilled," said Phelps. "I was going to get $100 out of it," said the witness, who, along with the three others, also owes the bank several hundred dollars for the bounced checks. Rigdon said the state agreed to forego criminal charges against the four if they followed through with their promise to testify truthfully about the financial scheme. Justin Creighton testified that he needed money when he was approached in January by one of Cooper's friends about the scheme. "All he needed was my help just to open a bank account," said Creighton, who was never paid the $400 to $500 that he claims Cooper offered him. The two witnesses said that they had known Cooper and his friend a short time when they were asked to help. The trial continues today with police officers among the anticipated witnesses. Cooper remains in jail in lieu of posting $15,000 and $35. Illinois may replace lottery manager. Illinois made a long-delayed move toward hiring a new private manager for the $2 billion per year lottery on Monday, years after the first of two governors tried to fire the current manager for missing sales goals. Officials with the sole bidder and finalist for the 10-year contract, Camelot, Illinois, presented an overview of its plan to increase the sales and put more money in state coffers for schools and other programs. It includes new, more prominent displays for retail sales and increased marketing of online sales. With better technology such as a mobile app, Camelot, Illinois' sister company, Camelot Global, runs the United Kingdom's National Lottery and has worked with lotteries in at least four U.S. states. "We have an ambitious plan, but the plan's also proven," CEO Nigel Railton said during a public hearing in Chicago. But it could still be months before Camelot takes over for the lottery's first private manager, North Star Lottery Group, if it happens at all. Lottery officials say they still must finalize contract deals with Camelot. If that process is successful, there will be a 14-day protest period, after which a contract could be executed, said Gregory Smith, the lottery's acting director. Smith said hiring a new manager has taken longer than initially expected because it's a complex process with big financial ramifications. Rushing it provides no benefit to the state nor to Camelot, Illinois, he said. Illinois was the first state to privatize its lottery when lawmakers voted to do so in 2009. At the time, supporters said annual contributions to the state schools fund would increase each year, with additional revenues going toward building roads and other public projects. North Star took over management from the Department of Revenue in 2011. After reporting early record sales, the company fell short of its goals. Then-Governor Pat Quinn first tried to fire North Star Lottery Group in 2014, but Attorney General Lisa Madigan blocked that move in 2015, calling it a bad deal for taxpayers. Later that year, Governor Bruce Rauner announced a new termination agreement which stated that North Star should be replaced by January 1, 2017. The state extended North Star's contract after missing that deadline. Meanwhile, under the termination agreement inked with Rauner's office, North Star is eligible to receive up to $17 million per year in disentanglement fees and up to $14 million in annual management fees. Those payments must reflect actual costs determined by a third-party auditor. After paying a final $10 million for missing revenue expectations, North Star no longer has to pay additional penalties as it did under its original contract. The lottery has faced other troubles. North Star and the state went to arbitration over a disagreement of how goals were set and performance calculated. Earlier this year, some lottery players sued North Star after a Chicago Tribune investigation found that the lottery did not award many of the biggest prizes in some of its largest scratch-off instant games. Illinois' budget woes also contributed to the problems. Some winners had to sue to get their payments after the state said it couldn't pay out because of a budget impasse. And Powerball and Mega Millions sales were temporarily halted this summer before the lawmakers finally approved a state budget for the first time in more than 2 years. There is a large photograph on this page of a woman looking through NASA-issued solar eclipse viewing glasses, which were supplied by the Bloomington Public Library. They're similar to most being sold in the area, but they have the NASA logo on them. Experts warn that you can test any pair of glasses for safety value by looking at bright light sources besides the sun. If you can see a light bulb, the glasses probably should not be used to view the eclipse. So this is Joyce Anderson of Normal. She's getting a head start on equipping her family for the coming solar eclipse next Monday, as she was among the last patrons at the Bloomington Public Library to pick up a special pair of glasses before they sold out. The glasses remain on sale at a variety of locations across the Twin Cities and are necessary for direct viewing of the solar event. If you aren't sure if your glasses are eclipse safe, a simple pinhole viewing device can be made for free by covering a wrapping paper cardboard tube with a piece of aluminum foil and puncturing it with the tip of a pin. At the other end, you place a piece of paper inside at a 45-degree angle and cut a viewing hole to observe the projected image. So be safe next Monday. Two killed in crash outside Pontiac. Two Livingston County men were killed in a weekend crash near Pontiac. Livingston County Coroner Danny Watson said Monday that the accident occurred in the early morning hours Saturday, about a quarter mile south of Livingston County Road 1600 on Old Route 66. Pronounced dead at the scene were 25-year-old Devin Millsap and 21-year-old Nicholas Hackney, both of Pontiac. An official time of death was not available. Watson said both men were ejected from the vehicle, a black Mitsubishi Montero Sport. It apparently left the road, went into the east ditch, and the car rolled several times, he said. Both men were ejected from the car. Autopsies have been ordered, and toxicology reports are pending, he said. Assisting the coroner's office at the scene were Pontiac Fire, Duffy Ambulance, Pontiac Police, the Livingston County Sheriff's Department, and Illinois State Police. We've come now to the end of the first half hour of the Pantograph. We'll take a short break. Please stay tuned.